weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Big thanks to Johnny's and Africa. It's Friday, the 22nd of March, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up today, Alan Colley and Austin O'Malley are in studio to preview the sporting weekend ahead. Plus, we'll be joined by Fergal Brennan, Shane McGrath and Jane Mangan. There's also live international football as we keep an eye on the Irish under-21s in their Euro qualifier. That's against San Marino, and they are winning 1-0 as it stands. The second half has just started. Plus, we'll hear from the Irish camp ahead of the opening weekend in the Women's Six Nations. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or on X at Game On 2FM, or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome along. A very excitable Alan Colley and Austin O'Malley are with me in studio. That's what happens when there's football on the TV at 6 o'clock, Ireland and San Marino in the under-21s Euro qualifiers. Al, I always get really excited about under-21 teams, and throughout the cliche, there's loads of talent in these underage teams. Am I right about this one?
Definitely about this one, Marie. Yeah, definitely about this one. That's why we're getting so excited here in studio. Not so much with the match, because they're playing San Marino. They're winning 1-0. You would expect them to win. It's a game they should win and they will win. They're totally dominant in terms of possession, shots at goal, corner kicks. San Marino haven't had an attempt yet, but they haven't made that dominance count on the scoreboard just yet. But they are winning 1-0. As I said, the second half has just started. Sinclair Armstrong, who's one of those potential stars, if you like, Marie, coming up, he scored, doing very well, obviously. Obviously, at club level with QPR as well, having an impact this season. But Andy Moran, who there's been obviously a lot of talk and a lot of speculation about, he's one that I definitely think will progress and play in the senior team. It's only a matter of time before he advances into that group, if you like. Another one doing very well at championship level at Blackburn. But there's a lad playing at the back, and for anyone who watches the under-21s or has seen me cover any of the games, I do wax lyrical about this lad, and I've just mentioned him to you here a moment ago. Bossin Lawal is his name, Marie, and remember that name. Okay. The famous line when Wayne Rooney came on the scene, remember the name.
Remember the name.
Yeah, Bossin Lawal, I think he's a potential star for Ireland. I really do, Marie.
He's playing the back there.
So he plays.
I'm bossing it.
He's with Celtic at the moment. He's on loan at Fleetwood, getting game time, playing every week. But he plays, funnily enough, he plays centre midfield with Fleetwood. Okay. He's a big, tall, physical, imposing figure. Very, very strong physically, but technically really, really good as well. But with the 21s, he actually plays centre-half. Now, I think he's a Rolls-Royce at centre-half, and he's one of those where you're looking at him playing centre-half and thinking it's too easy for him, and there's loads more in him. So at Fleetwood, he obviously plays in a tough league, centre-midfield. He's robust enough for that as well. It's no problem to him, the physical side of the game, but technically he's so, so good. And I think the higher up he goes, Marie, with the better teams, he'll have no problem technically, because he's so good on the ball. So he's one certainly to watch out for. I think he's fantastic, and I'm surprised that he's actually gone out to Fleetwood. Not so much to get game time, that's fine, I've no issues with that, but the fact that he's at Celtic, and Celtic are having their problems this year as well, that he hasn't been given an opportunity at Celtic yet. And I'm thinking Brendan Rodgers, he's obviously doing very well. That's all the lad can do, is when you're on loan, do as well as you can at the club that you're at and try and wait for your opportunity when you go back to your parent club. But he's an absolute star, Marie. I can't tell you just how good this lad is and how good he's going to be.
I was watching a debate between Damien Delaney and Keith Tracy on whether or not Nathan Collins could play as a defensive midfielder, and Damien suggested that he could. Keith said he is obviously very good at breaking up the game defensively, but you need a little bit more from the technical side of the game to move from defence to midfield. But obviously this kid can do it.
Oh, he can absolutely do it, because technically he's superb, Marie, and that's why he can do it. Is that another goal? No, Sinclair. But technically he's superb, and I suppose the attributes that you need to play in that deep lying midfielder is that obviously you need to receive the ball on the back foot, start attacks, build attacks, and he can do that all day long. That would be the worry I'd have for Nathan Collins if he was playing in there, receiving the ball, as I say, on the back foot, side on, and trying to play forward. He's very good, Nathan Collins, as we know. He's made a few mistakes this year. He hasn't been really all that great, I suppose, at Brentford, and Brentford have struggled throughout the season, and I've seen a couple of games where he has made mistakes, but playing him as the six wouldn't be for me, to be honest with you.
There's a debate on the overlap about the overlap, for anyone who doesn't know, is
my favourite programme.
Yeah, Alan loves it.
Even though it's on YouTube, it's not even on TV, but it's the best programme out there.
The production values are great.
Brilliant.
So who was it? They often have different people on. So who was on?
They actually didn't have a guest this week, Marie, but for anyone who hasn't watched it, it's basically Roy Keane, Gary Neville, Ian Wright. That's all you need to know. Just watch it.
Fox
and
office.
Jill Scott as well, and normally Jamie Carragher's with them. And from week to week, they might bring on a guest as well. Wayne Rooney's been on, Frank Lampard.
They had Ollie Gulley,
yeah, that was a brilliant episode. But this week's one, a debate broke out about the hardest position on the pitch, and Gary Neville reckons goalkeeper and centre forward. Roy Keane laughed at him about fullback, because and then he told examples of, he says he played at right full in the early days when he signed for Man United, and Neville was trying to argue the case that, well, the reason you were playing there is because Paul Ince and Brian McLaren were midfield and you were only trying to build your way into the team. And he says, I'll tell you the real reason I played there is because, he said, I was struggling with a hernia operation. And Alex Ferguson said, you won't cut it in midfield with a hernia struggling, but you'll have no problem doing it at right full. So there's constant banter and slagging with the Marie, but it's a brilliant, brilliant programme.
I had heard Carragher speaking about it. I know he wasn't on that episode, and he had reckoned that, or he reckoned that centre back or centre half was the toughest position because of the way it's evolved, and you have to be technically good now, you've got to be able to play the ball out from the back, you have to be physical, you have to be able to get up and try and get up for the set pieces as well and then get back again. So he had made the point that it was centre half.
I would say centre forward if it was me, our centre midfield. Centre half, look at that young fella, it's a breeze in my centre half. Don't mind Carragher, and he couldn't do any of them things. All he could do was defend. He was a very good defender, but he was average on the ball, Jamie Carragher. I'm not sure if he'd cut it nowadays. He would cut it, but I'm not sure if he'd be the likes of Van Dijk, who you're talking, the elite level. But he could play alongside Van Dijk because the different attributes would complement each other. But certainly I think it's the only position on the pitch, centre forward, where you're receiving the ball back to goal. And it's so hard, Marie, if you have a really good defender. And Ian Wright actually gives brilliant examples of the likes of Martin Keown, Tony Adams in training, and having to deal with that. And he almost said the fact that he was having to deal with them in training made it easier when he went out on a Saturday, because he was playing against the best centre halves in England. The different little traits and tips even they were giving him and all. But he did speak about that in terms of centre forward, and Roy Keane agreed with that as well, even though Keane, he's quite humble on a Keane, and he's funny, he throws out lovely little one-liners, but and he mentioned that centre midfield is the hardest in his view, but he also kind of went along with the view that centre forward is a very difficult position.
I think there's a huge pressure on centre forwards as well, isn't there, in terms of, like, you know, they're constantly under scrutiny in terms of return for goals and everything, and if it's not happening, it's, you know, it's,
well, I always found with centre forwards, Oz, because I played in midfield, if you have a centre forward who can hold the ball up and lay it off and bring players into the game, gets you up the pitch, they're worth their weight in gold. But so few can do that. And it's and it might sound as though that's being critical of people, in the sense that so few can do it. It's a really difficult skill when a ball is coming up to you. You're trying to obviously control it first of all, but there's someone thundering into the back of you, and you're trying to have the awareness to lay it off as well. It can be difficult, only very few can do it at top level, if you like. Then you have the added pressures of, not only do you have to do that in terms of what you're contributing to the team, but most importantly, all the pressure is on you to score goals. And that's the biggest pressure of them all.
Absolutely, because goals win matches.
Absolutely, and that's why they get the big bucks.
Well, Ireland have scored a second goal, so it was a free kick, and Andrew Moran, the goalie, spilled it, and Andrew Moran was right in front of him, and he rebounded it into the net. So 2-0 to Ireland against San Marino. 55 minutes on the clock there. We're going to be going back to football in just a moment, but we're going to look at the Women's Six Nations now. So Ireland are playing France tomorrow. They had a difficult enough Six Nations last year and are hoping to bounce back this year. So we previewed the Six Nations with Ali Donnelly on yesterday's show, and that's on our podcast. So tomorrow's game against France is going to kick off at 2:15 tomorrow. It is live on RTE2 and on Saturday Sport on RTE Radio 1. So do tune in for that. And we're going to hear the views now from Ireland player Dorothy Wall. She was involved last year, so she's going to give us her thoughts on the differences between this year and last year.
It's completely different to last year in terms of our preparation and everything, and our, you know, our knowledge around the detail we want to play, game plan, everything. It's just gone up a level, and it's it's great. Like, it's great that we have that level of detail and prep and physical and mental preparation for what's to come on Saturday.
So do tune in to that game tomorrow. The Ireland women kick off their Six Nations. A couple of tough games away from home, but they do have opportunities to get some results as well. Now back to the football. And as I mentioned, Ireland are leading San Marino by 2-0. Some very exciting underage stars there playing for the Ireland under-21s. We'll be keeping an eye on that. But the big one tomorrow is Ireland versus Belgium. Fergal Brennan joins us as well to look ahead to that game. Fergal, So John O'Shea says no alarms and no surprises, and that's what he's hoping for against Belgium at the Aviva Stadium. What do you reckon?
I think that will be almost the ideal situation. It might not sound like the most exciting kind of pre-game prediction, but I think if we're sitting here after the Belgium game and then obviously this, after the Switzerland game next week, with two positive results on the back of the situation at the end of 2023, obviously the ongoing kind of debacle surrounding the management situation and who will come in and what will the decision be in April over who leads the team in the long term. There's been an enormous amount of cliches thrown around with John O'Shea and some of the players over the last few days. But realistically, they do just have to take what's in front of them. They have to look at these two games, take what they can from them, hopefully get some positivity. I think across both Belgium and Switzerland, there's big potential to get at least one win. It's going to be very difficult against Belgium, even with one or two important players missing. They're warming up for Euro 2024. Switzerland, you'd anticipate it'd be a tighter game. I just think everyone is very interested to see how he sets up, because it's not being completely dismissed that he might be the option if this window goes well and if the kind of mystery surrounding who might be the actual person behind the door that's going to take over. And I think he will tweak, not tear up what Stephen Kenny was doing. I think he will tweak it. He will follow this message that he's been putting out there of being a bit more pragmatic in certain games and in certain situations. And I think that's what a lot of supporters have been crying out for. There's enormous amounts of positivity from what Stephen Kenny did and what he brought to the team. But certain edges just needed to be sharpened up a bit.
There's another goal, Alan, for the Ireland under-21s.
Yeah, 3-0, another one in quick succession, Marie. Sinclair Armstrong, it was the lad Healy, got down the right-hand side in midfield, got to the byline and pulled one back. I'm not sure, was it actually a defender got the final touch, but Sinclair Armstrong is certainly claiming it anyway, and that puts them 3-0 up. They're in total control, yeah. Marie, as you'd expect. All that dominance that they showed in the first half without putting it on the scoreboard, they're putting it on the scoreboard now in the second half. And is it 58 minutes gone, 3-0? You'd expect another two or three as well.
Yeah, good for them. Alan, tomorrow, what are you expecting from this Ireland-Belgium game?
I'm really looking forward to the game, Marie. And it's the longer it goes on without the manager and all the speculation, and whilst we have John O'Shea in situ, the more I feel as though John O'Shea is going to be the permanent manager. And that's the way it almost feels like it's heading at the moment. And I'd have no issue or qualms whatsoever with that. But a lot will depend on how the next couple of games go. Because as much as there's a lot of good feeling towards John O'Shea based on what he achieved in his career and the likeable person that he is, I feel from the general consensus amongst the public that they would be quite happy for John to carry on and build, and with the backroom team that he's assembled behind him as well, obviously with Glenn Whelan, Paddy McCarthy, Brian Kerr upstairs, if you like, as the director. I think a lot of people would be quite happy with that, but that's all based on how to do probably tomorrow and Tuesday. And a lot of things can happen in short-term thinking. People make a lot of decisions based on very short-term views. And I think if it goes really well for John O'Shea, he could be in a really good position that come Wednesday, they might just say, here, just give him the job. And that's how fickle sometimes decision-makers can be, and football fans can be, and the football industry can be. I even go back to Solskjaer after the night to beat PSG, and they're all throwing contracts on the table and give him the job and give him this and give him that. Look how that turned out. Now, I'm not saying that will be the case with John O'Shea, but certainly the point I'm trying to make is the fact that the longer there's uncertainty around who they're going to get, and as long as that kind of is carrying on with the, with all that furore around it, and I suppose it's turning a bit negative now, I think he's in a really good place to probably get the job on a permanent basis if these two games go well for him.
Fergal, he was asked about how the week went, and he said it was amazing, really good, and he said it's helped by the support staff around him and ultimately the players. It's really early days, but I can imagine that the players would absolutely love being in Ireland camp with John O'Shea as the head coach.
Yeah, and that's been the message in terms of the media calls that so many players have done this week when they've been asked, what's it been like coming into camp? Obviously, it's an unusual situation because obviously the managerial situation is still hanging over things. But there's a lot of positivity around it. And let's not forget, there was interviews with Nathan Collins and Andrew Omobamadile where they both said, he's a legend. Like in terms of their age bracket, when they were growing up, watching Premier League football, watching Ireland games, he was a huge part of that. He was captain for portions of it as well. So having him as now the manager and as the leader, that adds another level to it because he is so well respected because of the level that he played at club and obviously the importance that he had for Ireland over the years. And even Seamus Coleman said that, given the fact that he's captain, massively experienced, even he still sees John O'Shea as, well, when I came into the squad, he was someone that was established. He was someone that I looked up to and helped me on my journey, which obviously now has gone on for over a decade. It just comes down to how this week goes. And I would agree with Alan that we could be sitting here in a week or 2 weeks' time and it's gone from why not give John O'Shea a go to let's give John O'Shea a go. I just think the overhanging thing will be Mark Canham's comment of contractual obligations or requirements or whatever the exact wording was about the candidate that they wanted. There's now almost no way of framing this to say John O'Shea was the person that we wanted. It was all part of the plan. That's why we brought in this team behind him. Let's go for it from here. It will be a bit of a rehash. That doesn't mean it should be thrown in the bin, but it will have to be a rehash of a situation between all parties involved.
Well, we're kind of used to that, though, because for a long time we didn't think that Eoin Gleeson wanted the job or that she was in the frame for the job, and she ended up getting the job and we've all just got on with it. So,
Today I was reading it was the former Swedish manager was heavily linked with the job. So if, based on, I suppose, what reading in terms of an interview that he did last week and some of the comments that he made, and if that's obviously linking up with what Mark Hanham said about we have an appointment ready to go and ready to announce in April, we all thought that might have been Lee Carsley, based on, I suppose, the phrases that Mark Hanham used in terms of the contract situations. And we thought if Lee Carsley, I suppose, dealt with a couple of games that he had with the 21s and sorted out the contract issues, then he might be appointed. Obviously, he's totally out of the picture now, as we know, and that's confirmed. So today it was the former Swedish manager that was linked with it. But as I say, Marie, like, you're going from a position where Stephen Kenny obviously did a lot of good work in bringing a lot of lads through. Now we're almost at the stage where we feel these lads have been bedded in. They've had, I suppose, their development period, if you like, and now we're in a situation where we want to see them being competitive and challenging in groups and trying to qualify for major tournaments. John O'Shea completely 100% gets that in terms of what it means to play for Ireland and be competitive and be in the mix to challenge for tournaments. Like, we watched some of the playoffs yesterday and Wales playing Finland. Like, it just goes to show how important those Nations League games are. And I know there was that period and we were all for Stephen in the early days, but we're at the stage now where we want to see us try and get a few results and be competitive, and they completely get that. Brian does as well. And as I say, if you're basing it on who's the ones that's been linked, and a couple of the ones that we thought were linked and favourites for it, and chasing people that don't want the job, give it to someone who has pride in what he's going to be doing tomorrow, standing on the sideline, and be so proud to be standing on the sideline, a proud Irishman, and completely understands what it means to play for Ireland, and let him get on with it.
Okay, well, let's hear from that man who is full of pride to manage Ireland, John O'Shea.
Obviously, when you first get the players together and you're chatting to them the first time as well, that's the key part, and set the tone for the week ahead. But ultimately, what you said in terms of game time is the crucial part, and that's where the preparation comes into it. The final details exactly that we'll put in place today, and then a kind of a switch off for the boys to relax and focus. I think we'll be more so the word focusing on the kickoff tomorrow and the planning. And in terms of the conversation or the team talk beforehand tomorrow, look, that'll be straightforward in terms of what we'll be looking for, what will be needed from the players, and ultimately bringing it all together to get a big performance to win at the Aviva.
That was John O'Shea. So, Fergal, the team talk is going to be very straightforward. Is his starting 11 going to be straightforward?
I think everyone's having a bit of a guessing game, trying to decide both personnel and system. And I think he will look to stiffen up certain areas of the team. My hunch would be that he'll go with two holding midfielders. That's obviously a bit of a tweak from what Stephen Kenny was doing. And that was an issue, particularly against the better opposition, the Netherlands and France, that the bodies in midfield just didn't quite know where they were meant to be when they were in possession or out of possession. You go back to the France game where it was with the kind of Mike Mannion's fingertips away from being a one-all draw when he made that save from Nathan Collins. That was a really good performance, but it was built on this idea of be defensively strong, be defensively structured, and use the pace, particularly of Ogbeni on the break, and see if we can make something happen. I think we'll see a bit of a version of that. Josh Cullen, for me, is still very important, but he needs a hand in midfield. And I think primarily he needs a player designated next to him for the majority of the game, not two eights that will bomb forward and get back, because that that just doesn't really work. I don't think. I think Josh Cullen finds that quite hard to play with. And in terms of a back three, I don't really get the impression that's something that John O'Shea wants to go with. He might be forced into it because of a lack of options at fullback. I know Ryan Manning's joined up this morning, but will that be enough time to get him involved? I'm looking forward to seeing certain players. Obviously, Sammy Schmodix, there's been huge attention on him. But Jake O'Brien, for me, is the one that I'm really excited to see. He got a winning goal for Leon just before he joined up. Brilliant header from a corner. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can bring, because there's been a lot of defenders who've come through, done well, but maybe not kicked on. He's coming from a completely different angle, coming from Leon. He's playing not in the Premier League. He's playing in Ligue 1. He's doing well. Difficult situation with them at the start of the season. He'd be the player I think I'm looking forward to seeing the most.
Al, since we've started chatting, there's been another two goals.
Yeah.
Nearly a third, actually.
Nearly another one there, yeah. There's, they're banging the goals in now. Vata is after getting two. By the time I answered the last question, the next time I turn around, was another goal in. So, 5-0. San Marino are poor, as we know. When it went 3-0, I did say that there'll probably be two or three more goals. There could be another two or three on top of the five, because there's still, I think, 25 minutes to go. Jim's after making a couple of substitutions there as well and give lads game time. I think that's important. Not so much in this game, but I think it's important for the group as a whole going forward that everybody's in it together and all that kind of. And that's the one thing, even from speaking to Jim, I know him quite well, and from speaking to him, that he's really happy with this group. He says they're a great bunch of lads. Now, I know it's easy to say that about all lads and when you're the manager of a group, but Jim's very genuine and he tells me straight out.
Just a caveat
so you can imagine what else he tells me.
Yeah, when you're sitting beside him at League of Ireland matches.
Yeah, something like that. He's a great fella, and I'm delighted.
Surprised he doesn't ask you to get in there with the coaching.
Nah, he knows I'm quite happy here, Marie, on a Friday evening. But okay, one thing on that as well, sorry that you asked Fergal, and I think it's even from listening to the interview with John O'Shea, that's something that's impressed me throughout since he's come in. It's all very simple and clear, the messaging. And that's exactly what you need, Marie. Like, there's no jargon in the interviews. There's no media speak, if you like. He's very, very straightforward, yeah. John O'Shea. Very, very simple. Answers the question in layman's terms, if you like, and that's what people want. People don't want to be listening to jargon and rubbish, I suppose, in those interviews. And that's one thing I think that the players will enjoy as well, that they'll be very clear on the messaging, that what he wants from them, and very simple messages. I don't think he'll try to complicate anything.
I think
a big trait of Alex Ferguson's, I think, from watching him down through the years, is something that maybe he potentially could have picked up on it, just the simplicity of the messaging. Anytime you see any footage, even post-match or pre-match or internally in the dressing room, how clear and simple the dialogue and the message.
And it's funny, you use him as an example, because going back to the overlap stuff, the amount of times Neville and Keane all say that just straightforward messaging, you know, that they were nearly controlling the dressing room.
Clarity
at times.
Around that is, it's so powerful. Yeah.
Okay, the midfield is going to be somewhere that we would like to see a bit of improvement, some creativity. Let's hear from Josh Cullen on the influence that Glenn Whelan is having on him.
Yeah, it's been great to have Glenn in. Glenn was part of the squad when I first came into the squad under Mick McCarthy, so to see him again and have him back in and get little pointers throughout the week on the midfielder's role within the game plan for the team has been great. And yeah, just trying to soak up as much of the advice and knowledge that Glenn and all the staff have, and hopefully, like I said, put that into practice tomorrow.
He's been trying to tackle the midfielders, don't he? You have to rein him in a bit, but yeah. The lads have avoided him.
Look, having trained with Glenn and seen him play close up, I know that he had much more than that ability-wise. But sometimes I think the biggest compliment you can give to players like Glenn is you probably notice more when he's not playing, the job that he does for the team. The role that he carries out was always fantastic, and yeah, someone that I always watched and tried to learn from. And it's been, like I said, it's been great to have him around the squad this week.
So, Alan, what selection dilemmas does John O'Shea have?
Yeah, I think the point that Fergal makes about the two sitting in there is a good one, and to go back to a back four, obviously. I think the reason Stephen went with the three at the times, there was a lot of debate around the fact that the Chelsea coach has gone out of my head.
Anthony Barry?
That there was a lot of influence from him in terms of the back three. But I think a lot of that stemmed as well from the fact that we had so much personnel at centre-half, and it was nearly like you had to use as many of them as possible, because all our strength was nearly lying in a lot of the centre-halves that we had at the time. So I think he may go back to the back four, depending on the full-backs, but I definitely think he'll have no problem going back to a back four, John O'Shea, with the two sitting in front of him. But The one I'm really looking forward to seeing is Smodic as well. Mm. There has been a lot of talk about him. We've been crying out, I suppose, for that attacking midfielder that gets into the box, gets on the end of things. He's doing that at club level regularly. He's banging in goals. He's in the mid-20s in terms of goals at Blackburn.
27.
Like, that's incredible, really. And even watching him in a couple of the games recently, the FA Cup, he does exactly that. He gets into the box. So I think you could see him playing almost in a role where he'd be just off Evan Ferguson, but out of possession, he can drop in as one of the midfielders as well to help Cullen. And potentially Jason Knight, I think, might play in there alongside Cullen. On the wing, you'll see Ogbeni, who's having an unbelievable season, become a fan's favourite, if you like. Everybody loves Ogbeni. And I think Mikey Johnson is an interesting one as well, because since he's gone to West Brom, his form has gone through the roof, Marie. He's absolutely on fire at club level at the moment, and I'd love to see him take that form into the international stage as well. And he's one of those players that excites fans, that when he gets on the ball, fans get a lift, you think something's going to happen, and he'll be really exciting to see tomorrow. So I think John O'Shea will let the shackles off tomorrow in terms, I don't think he'll be conservative and sit back. And obviously you're playing against a very, very good team, and you have to be vigilant in all aspects when you're playing against brilliant players. But I definitely think it'll be more of kind of, look, we're at home, go out and have a go, lads, and take the game to them. And I think with the likes of Ogbeni and Mikey Johnson and Sammy Smodic, there's certainly three there that can hopefully create enough chances for Evan Ferguson.
Fergal, who do you think is going to be in goals? Will it be Kelleher or Bazunu? And also, will he pick a keeper or give them one each, do you think?
I think it'll be a game each for the two of them. I think I still say, whenever I've been asked about this, I still would go for Bazunu. I know that sounds harsh on Kelleher because he's been so good for Liverpool in the last few weeks. But I'm still a big believer in, he was first choice. For me, he was one of the best players under Stephen Kenny. He's done nothing to be deselected. He's fantastic. And I think the mental strength from the back of last season, where I think he was quite unfairly treated at Southampton, particularly by Ralph Hasenhüttl before he left. He's come back in. Southampton are gunning for promotion back into the Premier League. If they do, he'll be a huge part of it. And he is a fantastic keeper. It's just the age-old point of, it's typical bad luck that there's two fantastic goalkeepers coming through, and we could do with Kelleher playing central midfield, but that's just not the way things go. I think they'll get a game each. Long-term, if Kelleher's situation at Liverpool changes or he potentially moves on, then that's a different situation. But I still don't think Bazunu's done enough to not start. I still think he's a very, very impressive goalkeeper.
That's a fair argument, to be fair. Yeah, he has done very well. And at club level, particularly this year, as Fergal outlined, because Southampton are going very well. They've dropped off a little bit in the last couple of weeks, but they're certainly gunning for promotion. But I just think, and we've spoken a lot about this, Marie, in the last few weeks, about Kelleher. He's finally getting the run in the team that he's needed, and he has shown all the qualities that we always knew he had, because he's gotten that run. Sometimes I felt when he dipped in and out at Liverpool, at the odd game here, the odd game there, we were speaking earlier about the most difficult position on the pitch. Goalkeeper is probably one of the most difficult, and when you're being dipped in and dipped out, it's even harder again. So you do need that run of games to build up that relationship, I suppose, with a back four, that they feel secure, there's assurances there between the two. And I think you only have to look at the likes of Virgil van Dijk, who in my view is probably the best centre half in the world, and he loves Kelleher from what I can see in terms of the relationship that they have, and he has no problem whatsoever with Kelleher in behind him, and we've seen that in the last number of weeks. So it's hard to nail down one, but with a goalkeeper you have to. Kelleher would be my choice, but that's not to take away anything from Bazunu, who, like Fergal said, I think is a very, very good goalkeeper as well.
Okay, Fergal, thank you as always for that. Alan, I might get you to stick around because the goals are flying in.
Well, there'll be plenty more six now, Marie, yeah.
Yeah, 74 minutes on the clock, so given the rate that they're flying in, there should be a few more.
I think that's the first touch for the Irish goalkeeper, and Josh.
It was a quality Jim Crawford made another couple of changes there as well. We're going to take a very, very quick break. Stay with us, though. We have hurling, Gaelic football and racing all to come.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. The Allianz Football League is slowly coming to an end. It does feel like it's actually been on for a while, even though it's pretty quick. But by the end of Sunday, we will know the lie of the land on who's staying up, who's going down, who's qualified for finals, all that sort of stuff. We're going to focus on Division 1 today, because that's where a lot of the eyeballs are, and that's where television usually goes. Some interesting games. Obviously Monaghan already gone. The question then is who is going to be in the final. Derry are playing Roscommon, and Derry are on the verge of securing that spot in the Allianz League final. Ross Common know that an away win to Derry would be enough to maintain their top five status if Kerry defeat Galway. So there is a huge amount at play, especially as we know that Mickey Hart and Derry want to win every competition.
No, absolutely, Marie. Yeah, like it's a real kind of jigsaw, I suppose, at the moment. And this weekend will really kind of give us, I suppose, the final pieces of that. Looking at, like, it's a big ask for Roscommon heading up to Derry, I think, just given the form that Derry are in at the moment. Even looking at Derry the weekend there, obviously, they hit 3:15 against Mayo being at home. So they're in real potent form. Davy Burke would appear to be, his post-match interviews would say that he's quite happy in terms of the development, and he's bemoaned the fact that, you know, that they've been missing a number of guys. But I think most teams have been across the league. When you even look at, I suppose, the plight of Galway at the moment, just looking at some stuff there today, Galway had only four of their All-Ireland team that went to that All-Ireland final in 22 are playing last weekend. So there's a lot on the table still the weekend, but you would think on the balance of it that Dublin and Derry would probably make the league final. That's notwithstanding Kerry are still there with a shout, but all the signs from Kerry would be that they're heading for a warm weather training holiday to Quinta del Lago the week prior, and they would only be back the night before a league final. So okay, that could be in their psychology coming into the weekend.
Yeah, it's a pity, isn't it, that we're at that stage, though?
Yeah, that those things are factored in. But I suppose that's just the nature of the National League, and that it is a little bit squeezed and condensed, and managers are probably looking to, you know, through, they're looking at it with a different lens in terms of where the trajectory of their teams are and what they're trying to get from it, you know, and how they're trying to develop maybe different squads and what they're looking from. Probably a team that are coming, you know, may sort of, you know, grab a chance at getting to a league final, whereas the big powerhouses of Dublin and Kerry are probably looking just to consolidate and then, you know, get their big blocks of training in.
It's so close to championship though as well. Like, I know that's, they're in provincial championships that maybe might not be as tasking, but you would think that momentum would come into it, although I know there's lots of arguments to say that momentum isn't even a thing in sport. But anyway, that's an aside. I'm really looking forward to Dublin and Tyrone, and to be honest, it's because of Derek Canavan and how excellent he's been throughout the league. He's just been a breath of fresh air.
He has. He's been a revelation. And anytime I've watched him, I've been just so impressed again with him. Like, Tyrone's form has been probably patchy throughout the league, but he has been the one constant, I think, throughout their league campaign in terms of the levels of performance that he has reached, the scores that he's kicked, even his link play and so on. And just to watch again, and we've probably spoken of it before, but just to watch his partnership grow with Darren McCurry as well is a real promising sign for Tyrone. You know, he's rate of execution, and he's such a clean kicker, but he has that little bit of an X factor as well. Even when we look at the goal last weekend, you know, the work that he had to do to get it, and you know, that the kind of the half volley and that. So he has been, I think, the standout player for me across the National League, and he's really caught the imagination of a lot of people across it. So, like Tyrone per se are safe probably on six, but I would say that, you know, that could be a really, really keenly contested game in Croker. I'm sure both teams will revel in it. Dublin look like, obviously, they had a slow start and they lost two, but they just look to be kind of revitalised. Even, you know, looking in at, you're often looking at different things, and you know, obviously they had the passing of Shane O'Hanlon, and it was interesting how Kieran Kilkenny in a post-match interview after the Derry game said that, you know, they were really now you know, going after every game and kind of memory of Shane. So it's amazing, you know, what great teams will often use to, you know, a new why or a new sort of sense of purpose and so on. So they just look electric at the moment. I mean, in terms of, you know, they just look so crisp and sharp against Galway last weekend, and the way their efficiency and their economy in front of goal and the way they're moving the ball is just really back to where they were, I think, in the past. So, and that's again looking at, like, this weekend, I wouldn't be surprised if Mannion and the likes of Jack McCaffrey and Ryan Baskwell started, you know, because he's probably looking to get a little bit more minutes into them. Yeah. So, and they're all.
Wouldn't it be great if Canavan and Conn were at either end of the pitch, just shooting the lights out?
Absolutely. You'd hope. Well, with the way the Dublin have set up, they've gone after, they've gone aggressively after most teams' kickouts, and they've looked to play on the front foot. So that should definitely tell a story. the weekend. And obviously Tyrone, as I've said, they've been a little bit more patchy, but I think Tyrone should embrace that also and go after it. I don't think they're going to sit back in any regard.
The Monaghan Mayo game, so Monaghan are already relegated, so how are they going to approach this one?
Yeah, it'll be an interesting one. Like, I think probably from Vinnie Corey's perspective, like, he will look, like, obviously he got McManus back into the fold last weekend, which was, I thought he was outstanding for a guy that hasn't, you know, played a huge amount of minutes. Mm-hmm. So he's got him back on the pitch. So I think for Monaghan, it's probably getting minutes into those guys that are returning, you know, get another 70 odd minutes into Conor McCarthy and so on, and these guys to try and build. And obviously Monaghan have blooded a few new players through the league as well. Young McNulty, you know, put his hand up. I thought he's got a lot of the prospects. So I think it's more about development. They've obviously gone through the trapdoor. They've fallen down to Division 2. They've hung on for what, nearly a decade, and they've had some big Houdini acts on the last days and that. So, but like, in terms of when you look at a team going down, Dublin went down last year, came mm-hmm. straight back up. Looking at their earlier, you know, three teams, was it 2021 Mayo went down, came back and contested in All Ireland. 22 Galway came from Division 2 to contest in All Ireland, and 23. Dublin obviously came back up and won an All-Ireland, so it's not the, you know, it's not the end of the world dropping down. Particularly if you're trying to grow and develop a team, it might give you a little bit more space to do that.
So do you think that there should be league finals, or should it just be decided by whoever's on the top of the league?
I think personally I would be on for it, whoever's on the top of the league. I think it would really make a, you know, it would add a little extra layer to it, that everybody's going out really going for it, and it kind of pulls out that league final then at the end of it, where things are becoming a little bit more compressed. And it's nice to, you know, to sort of have that you've finished top of the league, you're the team that has finished on the most points and so on. I know the other argument is, you know, it gets a game into Croke Park, it's more into guys and that, but it's generally in Division 1, it's kind of the top two, three teams in the country that end up in it, so they're not shy of experience in Croke Park when you think about it.
Alan Collier, you're looking on intently.
Yeah, just listening to Austin's view and interest in it, because I used to love the league. Obviously, I'm a keen GAA man, Marie, and like the GAA, as you know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And like giving my tuppence worth and watching, I'm looking forward to the championship. But it's like as if, and we're doing this years, but it's like as if this time of year, we always have the same debates about the GAA. Yeah. And when it comes to the championship, it'll be the same about the provincial games and them being so one-sided, and it's a waste of time and it's a joke. And then we'll get to the semi-final and final, which will be absolutely amazing, and everybody will have forgotten about the previous 5 or 6 months and not try and fix anything.
And it just keeps come out in October,
and it just keeps repeating itself year after year. So I'm interested in terms of what Austin thinks of the league, and that would be probably good because what I'm hearing now and listening to, and the hurling seems to be the same, is that people now coming up to the final is that they won't even go full tilt in the final because the championship starts a week afterwards. And that would be such a shame, I think, that it's a trophy worth winning, and that if you're going into it thinking, oh well, we won't go full tilt because we have a match again in 7 days, which is more important. So I don't quite get that. I would have thought if you're playing out over 6 or 7 weeks of the league, that there's a trophy there to be worth winning, go and win it, and then concentrate in the championship when it comes
around. What if there's the warm weather training camp thrown in as well? Like, you could have a choice to go and win the trophy in Croke Park or have the warm weather training camp.
Yeah. I'll win the trophy.
Yeah, win the trophy and then go on the warm weather. But yeah, no, look, I suppose it's just back down to the fact then that it's so compressed, and things are so scientific now as well, in terms of, you know, the conditioning of players and the loading of players and trying to have players really fresh for when you need them most. And I suppose, you know, Mayo got probably caught last year in terms of coming out, won it. And I'm always saying there's always there's the physical toll on the body, but, you know, winning a national title, all the emotion, there's an outpouring, you kind of have to, you know, that's all unpacked.
Austin, right, and you're a Mayo man, so you just did, and you use that example. Like, how much did that mean to those players? Because Mayo have gone through such turmoil in terms of All-Irelands and trying to win the All-Ireland and haven't done it yet, as we know, in years and years. Whereas that league title, probably, you could have players in that current group over the past 5, 6, 7 years who've suffered such heartbreak, but yet when in 10 years when they're finished, might look back in that league title and say, we won a National League One title, which is huge for them.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you. And like, in terms of trying to garner some medals and some success from it, I think it is important. And probably when you finish your career, as you've stated there, and you look back, it's nice to have something to hang on to in terms of, you know, making a national final.
When we talk about the soccer at the start, and you have the league, the FA Cup, the League Cup, I know it's changed now, obviously the Champions League has taken over, but in the GAA world, it's the league and the championship at the start of the year, the only two trophies you can win, really.
Absolutely. So
if you can win one of them, you've had a good season.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more with you. And as I said, it's literally about, you know, trying to get the best out of players for championship, and that's probably the big one. But like it is used as a development competition to get ready for that. Mm. And I couldn't agree more with you in terms of, like,
the provincials have kind of become the League Cup now, haven't they?
Have, yeah. They have, in a way, and like there's much derision over them. But yeah, it's just, I think, the placing off it, like, if there was a little bit more wriggle room there between it and the start of championship, it would just give a little bit more breadth and space for people to breathe and go rightly at it, then just, you know, have that block where you can come down and load back up again and get ready. So I think that's that little bit of a bottleneck that's been created at the end. That's where the problem lies. Yeah, I think it's it's not where, I don't think, you know, managers, you know, would have gone out and said, well, it doesn't matter, or so on and so forth. I think it's just that little bottleneck that's been created has taken the varnish.
It's kind of left their hands tied a little bit, has it,
yeah,
the managers?
Yeah, it has, you know, and you have to be careful. You're trying to get the balance right for everything, to have lads in the right frame of mind, physically and mentally, and I suppose emotionally, coming in to a championship, which is, you know, pretty rigorous when it kicks off as well. So I think that's where the small problem lies.
Okay, hold on that thought, because we'll be talking to Shane McGrath in just a moment on the league semi-finals, and no doubt he has views on the best format for the league.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Shane McGrath is with us to talk the hurling semi-finals. How are you, Shane?
Good, Marie. How are you, boys?
Shane, I'm great. I'm changing GAA's formats and everything here. I'm flying.
I heard that. You would all sort of. You were broken.
Crying out for me, Shane, the GAA. It's crying out for me.
You would broke into the League Cup, the FA Cup, the Champions League. You would all sort of.
Absolute new format here.
Yeah.
Shane, we have two semi-finals this weekend. What are we going to get, do you think? Do you think we're going to get quality?
I think, going on the Limerick-Kilkenny game, Marie, because the teams are named, I always think there's a good statement of intent from managers how much they want to go at this with the team they're named, especially in the league. Like, and I just think that, like, say, Limerick are strong, like, you know, 12, maybe 13 lads who would be very close to championship starters. Kilkenny the same, like, so they're going to use it as, you know, really for both of them, it's a knockout game now. It's your last chance before championship to really test out, and to be honest, Marie, to try and get your best players playing with each other. Like, you could be in training and everything, but you have to get them on the field in a competitive environment just to get used to playing with each other again, even though they're maybe so used to playing each other down through the years. But it's still new season, there's going to be two or three lads maybe slotting in different positions, and I just think Limerick and Kilkenny have gone strong. We don't know the Tipperary teams, they'll probably be named tonight, so I just think even around the field, like, you know, Sean Finn being back for Limerick is a big thing, Marie, right? But we're used to seeing him a cornerback. He's a fullback, but I mean, has the hurling, has the physicality to play there. But, you know, first day back now, you know, after a serious injury last year, and he's marking, in my opinion, the greatest hurler ever, TJ Reid. So that'd be interesting. I think that's going to be a very good battle. I do, yeah. And that's from a Tipperary person, about a Kilkenny person. Yeah. So there you go.
You want to see her face when you said that would change? She's not sure.
He's
awesome. Oh, look, come here. We're all like, I mean, like, say, I just think what he has done, like, people talk about Henry and even Lone Kelly from Tip, and, you know, obviously Joe as well from Galway, and all these people. But I just think what TJ has done with his club and with his county, and I've played against him, I've watched him, and yeah, for me, he's the best ever. So there you go. So look, I'm sure there's people roaring at the radio, but we're all entitled to our opinion.
Shane, I'm in your corner.
So,
I agree.
I'm nearly sure John Milan is of the same
text
view.
Text us in 51552, who is the greatest of them all, greatest hurler of them all.
So yeah, that'll go on. So that's TJ and Sean Finn. So there you go. There's two greats battling it out. I think Adrian Mullen and Cathal O'Neill is going to be a fascinating battle as well, if they match up, because Cathal O'Neill, Marie, like, so you've Dermot Burns, Declan Hand in the half back line. Cathal O'Neill is there now. At the moment, for me, Cathal O'Neill has been the player of the league so far, that since he's gone back to the half-back line, and he's still not going to be guaranteed his place in the Limerick team. So I think him, Mark, and Adrian Mullen, if they do pick each other up, be a great battle, because Adrian Mullen, you know, has been the go-to guy. I think Hugh Lawler, Mark, and Dunico Dalig, Hugh Lawler playing full-back for Kenny, Dunico Dalig trying to make really, really make the team and put Jamie Flanagan under pressure for Limerick, I think that'll be a great battle. And I think Paddy Deegan and Adam English, for the reason that Paddy Deegan is at six. We know he likes to come forward. We know that if he gets a bit of space, he can shoot from distance. But Adam English, if Cathal O'Neill is player of the league, Adam English is very, very close behind. 5 points the last day from play against Galway. I was up at it watching him. And like, is Paddy Deegan going to allow him to run around the field, or is Paddy Deegan going to play his own game? So just for those battles alone, Marie, I'm actually down there tomorrow night with Pádraig. I'm really looking forward to it. So I think you're going to get a serious game there. But all that being said, I just think Limerick are on a different level, Marie. I really do. I think they're getting stronger week on week, and I do expect them to win that game tomorrow evening. Like.
Okay, so then on Sunday we've Clare and Tip. I read your preview today, and twice in the opening three lines you said it's a great opportunity for Tipperary. Well, I think it's a great opportunity for Clare.
Yeah. It's a great opportunity for both of them, Marie. I think because Tip aren't out till the week after everyone else. Like, everyone else will play the 21st of April. Tip are out the following week, so they have an extra week's grace there, Marie. So I think they can really, really go at it. But again, I think for Brian Lowen and Liam Cahill, the statement of intent is, you know, are you going at this? Are you really putting your who you think is going to be your closer Championship 15 out there? And if they do, then you see that they really want it. So in that regard, I think they will both go at it. And whoever wins then, like say if Clare won, Marie, and Limerick win, hard to know how that league final will go, like, yeah. You know, yeah. Because the championship. And I heard Alan talk about the trophies and everything, but like, Alan, like, it's even Owen Murphy did a great interview there, I was reading it there a couple of weeks ago. This is nearly like a pre-season thing now, Alan, to get ready for championship. And I just think the format of the league has to change, I think, because I know it's 2 week breaks and people are saying, yeah, but you're the NBA and the NFL and all these lads, they're playing week on week, even they're playing three games. Yeah, but GA players have these things called jobs, like, where they just don't have time for the recovery, like, and it's recovery is the thing, you see.
No, I totally get that. I totally get that, Shane. My point is just, I suppose we all start off in life as kids playing sport to try and win something, and if you're good enough to get to county level, it probably means even more if you could win a national title, hence it be the league or an All-Ireland. And I nearly think it's sad on the players that you're coming into semi-finals there tomorrow and then potentially a final next week, and you're almost saying, well, judging by the teams, they're going for it or they're not going for it. I think that's a bit sad. Like,
okay, lads, we're getting.
Oh, look, and even
Shane, the texts are flying in. Going to have to cut this league debate now because we've Jane Mangan standing by as well, right? So Joe Canning, according to Ollie, has done it all with the club as well as TJ has. And
which are Ollie? That's his brother, is it?
The best we've ever seen. But TJ Henry and DJ are all very close. Another texter says, Joe Dean, best ever. Well, Shane, I'm sending my three lads down to the Six Mile Bridge Hurling Camp for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So we're hoping for a Clare win because Shane Amore, Colin Malone, Adam Hogan, Mark Rogers and Tony Kelly are coaching them. So hopefully they'll be all in good form down there next week. So thank you, Shane.
Ah, look, Marie, is that magic that they're able to meet their heroes like that? I think that's brilliant. You know, that you can just go up and actually, you know, physically get their autograph, have a chat with them. I think that's the brilliantness of the GAA, I suppose.
Yeah, but you know it's going to be sad, Shane, when you're telling the kids on the camp, don't get into sport because we don't want to win. We won't be going funny at it.
I'm just
change the format. Take out the semi-finals, take out the final. Let the winner be whoever's top of the group, Alan. I think that'll solve it.
I'm hoping they'll teach him how to hurl. But anyway, Shane, thank you so much. We'll be talking to you. Next week, talk to you soon. Okay, Jane Mangan is standing by. We are nearly out of time, Jane. I feel so bad when we're going to you so late, but we had a very important discussion to have there about the best structures for the league and the championship. So we've cut you short, I'm afraid.
We still
don't
have an answer.
Marie, you can bring your four lads to the races and they can meet the jockeys and the trainers and the horses in person and in the flesh. And this weekend, you can do it at Navan, Limerick, and Naas. What the one race I really want to mention is the Lincoln at Doncaster tomorrow, 3:35. Two Irish runners. Fozzie Stack is bidding to bring off a unique double with Chesame, who won the Irish Lincoln at the Curra last weekend. He's going under a £5 penalty with Joey Sheridan across to Doncaster to see if he can take home this near £100,000 prize. He's going to be joined by the Johnny Murta trained Blues Emperor with Ben Cohen. So we have two Irish challengers in the main race there. And at Naas, closer to home if you want to go there, the Madrid handicap last year was won by Paddington before he went on to win the Guineas, St James's Palace and more. This time around you've got Military from Team Ballydoyle, Guildenstern for Dunica, My Maid Alfie for Ajur Lions. That's an interesting race, along with the Davoy Stakes, where I think Knight to King for Dermot Weldon, Chris Hayes, will take an awful lot of beating. But sport is sport. sport, and for the youth of today, it's much better than looking at a screen, guys, isn't
it? You're dead right, Jane. I actually had to drop something into Ted's house, Ted Walsh's, Ruby's dad's house one day, and I had the lads with me, and he threw the three of them up on a horse, and they were
asked,
get up
here
and threw them up, brought, they were
brilliant.
White as sheets, they hadn't a clue. I think they'd never even seen live animals before.
Plant up on them, that's class.
There you go, Jane. Right, Jane, enjoy the weekend. We will talk to you soon. Alan, no League of Ireland for you?
No League of Ireland, Marie. Yeah, I'm home to watch a friendly tonight. Scotland and the Netherlands. But we'll be in the Aviva tomorrow, rolling on John O'Shea and a new look Ireland. So hopefully all goes well for him.
Absolutely. There is loads going on when you think of all of that over the weekend. I won't be here on
7-0 was the final score, sorry, with the 21s.
Okay, very good. Ruby will be here to look back on all of the weekend's action. Thank you, guys. As always, thanks to all of our guests. Raf is on a Monday as well. And Blonda Tracy with the official chart show is up next. RTE 2FM.